the biggest fool that ever hit the big time. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
Hello, welcome to a Six String Hayride podcast, a journey through the world of classic country music with your hosts, Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley. We will be covering all of the great topics in country music, from mama to prison, to dancing, to drinking, to guitar picking, to all the crazy deal with the devil, honky-tonking stuff you do on Saturday night, and how you try to get it past your Lord on Sunday morning. So climb aboard the cart and let's go. The Six String Hayride podcast with Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley. We're taking a look at the world of classic country music and a whole lot beyond, basically looking at the world and art and culture through the lens of the classic era of country music, a little rockabilly on the side. So jump in the cart and come along on the ride with us. Today we are talking about the man himself, Sir Richard Starkey, your friend and mine. We know him as Ringo Starr.
I only ever wanted to be a drummer.
John, Paul, George, and Ringo played like a unit.
Give me Ringo. What would Ringo do?
Lead with my left.
Four drums. That's all Ringo Starr needed.
And the look on our faces was all like, fucking up.
Ringo Starr, a drummer, a rock and roll pioneer, a singer, writer, and band leader, and the man responsible for more people picking up the sticks than ever before.
Well, how come you say you will when you won't? Say you do, baby, when you don't. Let me know, honey, how you feel. Tell the truth, how is love real? But well, honey, don't. They're gonna put me in the mood. Big start out of me. We'll make a film about a man that's sad and lonely. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
Don't pass me by, don't make me cry, don't make me blue. 'Cause you know, darling, I love.
Richard Starkey is born July 7th of 1940. This guy is going to be 85 years old this summer. So, hey, Ringo, cheers. Thank you for all the music. Ringo is the oldest of the four Beatles. He's also the last to join. The Beatle drummer from 1960 through 1962 is a human footnote known as Pete Best. Average drummer.
Drummers are
hard to come by for up-and-coming bands, you know, pretty much in any city in any year. Pete Best has a car and an encouraging mother and a drum kit. And at that point, that's really, you know, the best qualifications you can have for the gig. The fact that he was an average player doesn't really catch up to John, Paul, and George until the summer of 1962, when record producer George Martin signs them on, agrees to record them. During the audition process, George Martin approaches Beatle manager Brian Epstein and says, you know, the drummer's a really good-looking guy. And he was. He looked a lot like a young Tony Curtis, the movie star. But the drumming, you know, I'm probably going to bring a session guy in. And, you know, the other three were not particularly in love with Pete Best as the fourth Beatle. Like I said, it was a matter of convenience. So they approach their friend, Ringo Starr. He is the drummer in a band called Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. Like the Young Beatles, they're a successful club band in Liverpool. And on the summer, what would be the holiday circuit in some of those seaside towns. And in Hamburg, Germany, where a lot of young English bands went to kind of fulfill Hamburg's nightlife and their desire for a lot of American blues and rockabilly type music. So Ringo gets asked to join the Beatles in the summer of 1962, and he accepts. And John Lennon was often fond of saying in interviews that, you know, we were a good band in 1960, 1961, but we weren't really Beatles until we got Ringo. That was the missing piece of the puzzle. It's a hell of a compliment, and history and the music they made really bears that out. So Ringo is born in July of 1940, July 7th, in a poor section of Liverpool called the Dingle. His parents split up when he's young. He's a very sick child. He has long periods of being in the hospital to, you know, a year. He has a bad case of appendicitis as a child and tuberculosis. The reality of raising a young boy in post-war England with, you know, the kid has a lot of health problems, you know, the tuberculosis, the appendix, and Ringo's dad, Richie Sr., basically abandons the family and takes off. In 1954, when a young Richie Starkey is 13 years old, his mother remarries a gentleman by the name of Harry Graves. Harry Graves is an amateur musician. He is a huge fan of big band music and American country music. Ringo is introduced to people like Sarah Vaughan, Billy Daniels, and Hank Williams. It's his stepfather, Harry Graves, that first gives him a used, beat-up, incomplete, but it's a set of drums. And during his long childhood hospital stays, you know, again, tuberculosis and appendicitis, the appendicitis surgery led to abdomen, stomach troubles, and infections. He missed a lot of school. So it's this kind of real, you know, difficult Liverpool upbringing that gets Ringo to the point where everything is music, 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 drums, drums, drums. And he had played with Rory Storm and the Hurricanes, 1960 to 1962, because a lot of the gigs and the scene with these local Liverpool bands overlaps, he becomes really good friends with John and Paul and George, mostly with George Harrison. And when they approach him in the summer of 1962, Ringo accepts. And we all know the rest is history at that point. When the Beatles bring Ringo as their new drummer to that first recording session in August of 1962, the producer, George Martin, is really thrilled that they got rid of Pete Best and they made the change. But because he doesn't know Ringo, didn't audition him, didn't work with him, on that initial recording session, Love Me Do and P.S. I Love You, George Martin turns the sticks over to a fellow named Andy White, a studio player. And Ringo is relegated to tambourine on Love Me Do and maracas on P.S. I Love You. In the years since 1962, the other version of Love Me Do with Ringo on drums has been released.
So please, love me do.
We all know how this turns out. Ringo Starr is regarded as one of the great drummers in any type of music.
Such an iconic drum set.
Four drums. That's all Ringo Starr needed.
The most timeless drummers are the ones that are the most simple.
Define the best drummer in the world. Is it someone that's technically proficient, or is it someone that sits in the song with their own feel? Ringo was the king of feel.
He's a song drummer. Guys that sit down and they hear the song and then they play appropriately for that song.
He actually used his kit in a very different way, a very creative way.
But for example, on Ticket to Ride, he said, well, I've got something different. Really cool. Very innovative.
His fills are really fun and quirky to play. His left-handed, he'll come through like that. I've seen him do it, and it's like, okay.
But he would lead with his left hand, which most right-handed drummers, when you go around the drums, you lead with your right hand. And there is a different sound to it, a different feel to it.
If a producer says to you,
give me Ringo, what would Ringo do?
So it's a Ringo swing. And he kind of washes the windshield on the hi-hats, man. I mean, it's a fucking Ringo thing. It's like a style of music.
You know, it's that sloppy, swampy, falling down the stairs kind of sound that is the coolest thing ever.
Big contribution of Ringo was that he used his tom-toms as part of the composition.
He really had a knack for coming up with really interesting musical parts that became rhythmic hooks. And just, I mean, honestly, If you're a drummer and you can do this and have people dancing, you're a fucking badass.
I only ever wanted to be a drummer.
Ringo is incredibly well regarded as a drummer by fans and by fellow musicians. And at this kind of early point in the rock and roll era, you know, again, 1962, between 1962 and the end of the Beatles' recording career in 1970, it's really the British musicians that help shape 1960s music as we know it, certainly in rock and roll and in pop music. In the early 1960s, we have Ringo and we have Rolling Stones legend and one of my other favorite all-time drummers, Charlie Watts. And both Ringo and Charlie are influenced more by jazz and by country and not a whole lot by blues, certainly not as much as the guitar players in their respective bands. And Charlie Watts and Ringo Starr are both guys who are famous for playing the song. They're not doing all kinds of fills. They're not busy just for the sake of being busy. They're not loud for the sake of being loud. They're not known for their drum solos. By the end of the 1960s, the other phenomena we get with the English drummers is the sort of Animal the Muppet school of drumming. We get Keith Moon from The Who, Ginger Baker with Cream, and probably most famously, John Bonham, one of the masters of the Purdy Shuffle as a drumming technique with Led Zeppelin.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Why does Ringo drum the way he does? Where is that coming from? A lot of it is the music that he liked growing up. Big band music, especially the drummer Gene Krupa. And then you get the simplicity and the shuffle kind of grooves of honky-tonk music and Hank Williams kind of things. The other big early music that comes Ringo's way as a kid who's sick and out of school and home a lot are the Gene Autry films. And Ringo's been on record many times in interviews saying that one of his really, early childhood things in music that he just fell in love with is the Gene Autry records. But the physical reason for Ringo's drumming style is he is a left-handed person playing a drum kit set up for a right-handed drummer, basically playing, physically playing backwards. When you go through the Beatles catalog, the things that Ringo or the other three would mention as being real standout examples of the man's ability, we're looking at songs like Rain. Here's a clip. It's Ringo says very often that this is one of his personal favorites from his work with the Beatles. There's also Ticket to Ride, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and of course, the really solid, just in your head kind of groove that comes with the track Come Together from the Beatles' final album, Abbey Road. So that's Ringo, the musician, the man, the drummer. It's hard for me to conceal the fact that he is one of my top three drummers ever, always. I've been listening to the Beatles since I was a little kid. And going back to that idea that John Lennon brings up of we weren't really Beatles until we got Ringo, if you look at the movies that they make as a band while they're together, it starts out as kind of an accident, but in Hard Day's Night, one of the key parts of the movie where there's actually a plot and a story and acting, and it's not just the Beatles being cute and peppy and doing some great songs, is towards the end of the film, where egged on by the character of Paul's grandfather, who's very clean, by the way, Ringo kind of gets all sulky and wanders off from rehearsal right before a big TV special. And there's this wonderful bit where he's kind of wandering around, kicking a can and talking to a kid who's playing hooky. And there's a real warmth to it. And I think for a lot of fans early on in the Beatles, there's the, you know, Paul's cute, John is cute, George is cute or whatever. But Ringo has this real kind of lovable charm where you just want to bring him home and make him supper. And there's just a warmth about the man's personality at this early stage of Beatlemania. And then when we get to Help in 1965, it's in color. There's a bigger budget than Hard Day's Night. Help, I think, is also, if you're really paying attention, it is one of the better spoofs of a James Bond movie ever. It's really freaking hilarious in the way that they play the kind of tropes or gags, the set pieces from a Sean Connery Bond movie of that era. And knowing how the audience responded to Hard Day's Night, they give Ringo a deliberate big role in Help.
They're gonna put me in the movies. They're gonna make a big star out of me. We'll make a film about a man that's sad and lonely. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
And then when we get to Yellow Submarine, you know, it's a cartoon and it's other people doing the voices. But that idea of singling out Ringo as a lovable kind of goofball character, you know, as soon as you get to the point where they're in the submarine and told, don't push this button. And Ringo's like, push the button. And he pushes the button. And then it's the hole in the pocket and all the other gags. Ringo's personality was really the element that carries the band through the films.
Now, whatever you do, don't touch that button.
Which button?
That one.
This one.
And then we get, you know, later on with the White Album, Ringo writes a country song called Don't Pass Me By. And a little bit later on, you know, the following year for Abbey Road, is it a kid's song? Is it a country song? I think it's kind of both. But the track Octopus's Garden, that's another Ringo composition.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
It's a fun song, and much like the Carl Perkins covers he did early on, it's a chance for Harrison to really show off his ability as a country music guitarist. So once the Beatles are done in 1970, you know, McCartney's already working on a solo album, and he's playing all the instruments himself, and it's a good record, and it's impressive and all that. And you know, Lennon comes out with the Plastic Ono Band record, and then Imagine, you know, very quickly, and that is one of those just classics of music everywhere in the world. You know, any day of the week, ask anybody, it's an extraordinary accomplishment. George Harrison goes all out with a 3-record set, All Things Must Pass, and because of George's love of Perkins and Chet Atkins, you know, and a lot of people assume Harrison is the country music element in the Beatles because of the Carl Perkins thing and because playing the Chet Atkins Gretsch guitars. It's just as much Ringo. So George brings out the great country player, pedal steel master, and producer, Pete Drake.
Look at me now, ain't I a sight? Eyes bloody red, face puffy white, hair tangled up and wrinkled old clothes. I'm a living example of a big overdose of wine,
women, and loud happy songs.
Somebody that, you know, Chris and I love the man's pedal steel playing. We've talked about him quite a bit on the show over the last couple of years. But George has him come out to play on the All Things Must Pass project. And he gets to know Ringo. And he gets to appreciate Ringo's love of country music going back to childhood. And initially, you know, Ringo's like, well, maybe we can work together. And Pete Drake is like, yeah, maybe we can work together. And Ringo's thinking, well, you know, I'll do tracks here and I'll send them to you in Tennessee and, you know, you can do whatever. And because Pete Drake is just freaking smart and a great musician and has a great mind and ear for production, he kind of brings up the idea of, well, you know, Ringo, if you actually come to Tennessee, and I know you got at least the money for a plane ticket, I mean, you are a Beatle. But why don't you come to Tennessee and meet the players and eat the food and breathe the air and walk around and just get immersed in that environment? So Ringo does. And he meets up with another incredibly famous drummer and somebody who was a big influence on Ringo because of the old Elvis Sun Records stuff, BJ Fontana. So we get Charlie Daniels on guitar, we get Jerry Reed on guitar, we get Pete Drake and Ben Keith on pedal steel, we get Charlie McCoy on harmonica, we get the Jordanaires on the backing vocals, we get DJ Fontana from the original Elvis lineup on drums, and if you just need a little more Elvis in there, just because, hey, why the hell not? The engineer on this record is Scotty Moore, one of the original great guitar players of the rockabilly and early rock and roll era. So, you know, we get Scotty Moore and DJ Fontana working together again and Pete Drake, you know, running the show. This is a hell of an album.
I left Louisiana. I had me big plans to go out and take me all over this land. To see me the world, I left my sweet girl and gave it a whirl. But now here I stand alongside the road with holes in my soul, in my shoes, and buku's the blue. Marsh by the breeze from the Gulf, I'm coming home.
Coming home.
I've had me enough.
It's Buku of Blues from September 1970. The title track is a single in the U.S., and it's got a rare B-side of a thing called Coochie Coochie, written by Ringo. And, you know, Ringo's first album after the Beatles is Sentimental Journey, and it's more of a standard, you know, Tony Bennett kind of thing. And then right after that, the second album, Buku of Blues, it's not a big seller. It gets up to number 34 in Canada. It gets up to number 21 in Norway, and it gets up to number 65 here in the States. But it's Ringo doing what he loves with the guidance and the friendship of somebody at the level of Pete Drake, you know, and then Scotty Moore is the engineer. I really love this record. And we're here today to talk about kind of the bookends, you know, Buku of Blues from 1970, and then the new album, Look Up, from 2025.
Yeah, Jim, you know, you made some really good points about Ringo being the guy who holds it down, not only as a drummer, but as a band member. And something that I really found interesting is that, you know, the Beatles break up, but they all kind of continue to record with Ringo.
Lives on the farm, got plenty of charm, beep, beep. He's got no cows, but he'll got a whole lot of sheep. A brand new wife and a family. And when he comes to town, I wonder if he'll play with me. Laying in bed, watching TV, cooking. With his mama by his side, she's Japanese. They screamed and they cried, now they're free. And when he comes to town, his long-legged lady in the garden picking daisies for his soup. A 40-acre house he doesn't see, 'cause he's always in town playing for you with me. And when I go to town, I wanna see all three. And when I go to town, I wanna see all three.
You know, John Lennon needs a bass player for something. He's calling Klaus Voormann because, you know, screw that lefty over there. I'm not using him. It seems like everybody continues to use Ringo, and that makes so much sense because he brings such a presence to the recording process itself. Like, he just has such a unique style, but he also just, he's so chill personality. Actually found a transcription of an interview that was broadcast on a show called Inner View, which was a radio show in the US. This was back on August 29th of 1977. The chat is between Ringo and a gentleman by the name of Elliot Mintz. And it was recorded in Ringo's own home in the Hollywood Hills. And this is what he says, quote, "And I did the country album because I still like country and Western music. And that happened by accident. We were playing on George's album and Pete Drake was there. I had lent him my car and he noticed I had all these country tapes besides the rock tapes and any other tapes in the car. And he said, ah, you like country? And I said, yeah, I really dig it. And he said, well, you should come do an album in Nashville. And I said, no, I'm not looking to spend 3 months in Nashville. And he said, what are you talking about? And he said, what are you talking about? We do an album in a week. He was leaving and I said, I'll be there a week from Saturday. You get it together and I'll fly in. And we went in. I was getting up at 10 in the morning, learning 5 songs, then going in at 7 at night, and we cut 5 songs.
I brought her here from Arkansas, a simple country girl, to try a Californian way of life. But it didn't take her long to learn the ways of the modern world. Now she's California's fastest moving wife. She's working on it all the time, but soon she'll finish me.
Ringo's latest album, Look Up. It was released just a few months ago. It was released on January 10th of this year, 2025. It's actually Ringo's first full-length album in 6 years. The Beatles are no strangers to country music. Ringo himself features into their biggest country hit, which is a cover of Act Naturally by Buck Owens. The song was written by Johnny Russell. It was made famous by Owens, but then when the Beatles release it on Help, as well as it being the B-side of Yesterday, you know, it gets launched right into the stratosphere. Fans should actually note that Buck and the Buckaroos, they more or less paid tribute to the Beatles by including Twist and Shout on the Live at Carnegie Hall album, along with their little Beatles wig joke segment. So there's clearly a mutual respect there, and definitely I'm sure there must be an appreciation by both Buck Owens and Johnny Russell. You know, the Beatles having a big hit with a song that you wrote or published. Not all Beatles country songs are the same. You know, I would say that Act Naturally is a really natural fit for Ringo's voice and his mannerisms. Some of their songs, though, like Rocky Raccoon by Paul, they ring much less sincerely. And I don't think it's just because it's an original rather than a cover. After all, Don't Pass Me by Ringo is an original, but it doesn't seem like a hollow shell of what country music should sound like.
I listen for your footsteps coming up the drive. Listen for your footsteps, but they don't arrive. Waiting for your knock, dear, on my old front door. I don't hear it. Does it mean you don't love me anymore?
Along the way with the Beatles, we also get some sincere tributes to Carl Perkins via George Harrison, with Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby.
Everybody's trying to be my baby now.
Went out last night, I did say late, for the home had a night. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now. Thank you.
you know, this leads us to 2022 when Ringo and songwriter slash producer T-Bone Burnett run into each other at an event, and Starr asks Burnett if he has any songs for him to record. And Ringo says that in his head, he was thinking pop rock, since that's what the prior run of EPs had featured. And instead, the first song T-Bone sends is Come Back, which is on this album. And enclosed is a note that says, "Dear Ringo, here's the first song I've come up with for you. If you dig it, there are a couple of guys down here in Nashville that I would put on it and finish it." So Ringo loves the song so much that he decides he's going to make a country EP. He writes what becomes the closing track, Thankful.
Started to fall. I turned away from all the things that matter. From lost in the dust, no one to trust.
For his wife, former Bond girl Barbara Bach. And now he's got two songs in hand. So Starr asks Burnett if he has any more songs. And Burnett quickly sends another 9 tracks to round out a full-length album. T-Bone sends him 9 more tracks. And Ringo realizes he's got an album on his hands. You know, he just dives in and decides, okay, I thought, you know, I was done with albums for a while, but here we go. So this takes us to 2025 and the release of the new album. Again, it's his first since 2019's What's My Name? The album is cheerfully titled Look Up. And one thing I really like here is that Mickey Raphael plays harmonica on the 4th track called Never Let Me Go.
Never let me go. Never let me go. Never let me go. Never let me go. I will never leave you lonely. I will never fade away. I will be your one and only. I will love you night and day. Never let me go. Never let me go.
One thing I really do like about this one is that Ringo blends the old. You know, the album is produced and mostly written by T-Bone Burnett. And the new, we have hot young stars of today like Billy Strings and Molly Tuttle. But he does it in a way that comes off as seamless. You know, a lot of times you get these kind of pairings that are designed to be somewhat gimmicky. Like, let's put a new up-and-coming artist with an old established star and see what happens kind of thing. But here, I mean, it just seems like they weren't going for any gimmicky effect. You know, these were people that T-Bone genuinely must have wanted to have on the album.
where have you been so long, Rosetta? Ever since you've been gone, scenes come flashing back to me, burned into my memory, Rosetta. Where you been so long, Rosetta? The sun's low in the sky, Rosetta. Now and then I wonder why, because I know I'll never know how I ever let you go, Rosetta.
Molly Tuttle seems to be thrilled with her inclusion. I read where she told Billboard, "I felt incredibly grateful for the chance to collaborate with Ringo, who has given the world some of the most amazing music of all time. I've also been a fan of T-Bone Burnett since I was a child, and it's been a longtime dream of mine to work with him. So when he approached me about this, all I could think was, yes." I also thought it was fascinating when I read that Ringo took two stabs at the drum track for each song and then no more, because he wanted to keep the sound fresh. So when you listen to this album, you're not listening to, you know, something that was overproduced to the point of being sterile. What you're hearing is a very natural sound that has, you know, come together and is very quickly being immortalized in the recording process. And it does make the album sound a little raw at times, but overall, I just think it just sounds, you know, these pairings come off so naturally. It just seems so seamless the way it's done. And Jim talks about this all the time. I talk about this all the time. The running time on this one, 36 minutes and 57 seconds. So hell yeah.
Do people around the world love Ringo and love this album, you know, as much as Chris and I are talking it up? Yeah. In Austria, Ringo's new album, Look Up, hits number 14. In Germany, it hits number 14. On the Scottish album charts, it hits number 5. In Switzerland, it's number 7. On the UK, on the British country charts, it's number 1. On the UK Americana albums chart, it's number 1. In Spain, it's number 54. On the U.S. Billboard, it's 147. But on the U.S. Folk Album Billboard chart, it's number 12. And on the U.S. Country Album chart, it's number 27. So, yeah, music lovers around the world. You know, yeah, people around the world love Ringo, and they love the music the man makes. You know, and this is a really, really fun album. You know, it's not a deep, serious Revolver, Rubber Soul kind of thing, but does it swing? Yeah. Is it fun? Yeah. Do you catch Ringo's love for American country and rockabilly music when you listen to this record? Oh, hell yeah.
So the opening track of this album, which is called Breathless, starts out upbeat and poppy. Found myself enjoying the fact that Billy Strings is somewhat restrained here. For listeners who know anything about Billy Strings, he is an absolute, you know, acoustic guitar virtuoso a la Roy Clark level. I mean, the kid is a damn genius at the fretboard. And normally in his own stuff, you know, he might play lightning fast, like incredibly. You'd almost think you're hearing a banjo player sometimes. He's just so fast and accurate and precise, but that's not his role on this album. it really felt to me like T-Bone Burnett was trying to put together a true collaboration rather than some sort of, oh, let's just get some super fast hot licks on here to try to fool the younger crowd into buying this. I just think that having a guy like Billy Strings on the album will definitely get some Billy Strings fans to listen, but not having him overplay the entire song, I think, makes it a better finished product. Second track on the album is called Look Up.
No matter where you place in the human race, there is mercy, there is grace. Look up over the clouds, look up over the crowds, up above your head where the music.
It's the title track of the record, and this one features Molly Tuttle, much to the delight of bluegrass and jam band fans everywhere. I liked the pedal steel on this one. The fourth track on the album is Never Let Me Go. As I mentioned a little bit ago, Mickey Raphael actually plays harmonica on this song. I think he does a fantastic job setting the mood for this one.
Never let me go. Never let me go. Never let me go. Never let me go.
I will never leave you lonely. I will never fade away. I will be your one and only. I will love you night and day.
Never let me go. Never let me go. Never let me go.
Hey, Ride listeners, you'll have no idea this is a thing, but right now Jim is not on screen. I can't really see him. I'm assuming he's okay. He probably hasn't wandered too far.
Then she held out some marijuana, huh? She said it was the best in all the land. And I said, no, 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 I don't smoke it no more.
And once again, the pedal steel here, it really sets the mood for the track overall. It's almost like an orchestral accompaniment.
I don't live in the future.
And I just, you know, I like Molly Tuttle with Ringo.
I live for your love. I live in the moment. I live in the now. I live for your love.
I really almost think the two of them need to do like some duet albums. Next, we have the song that started it all. This is the first song that T-Bone sent to Ringo when Ringo asked, "Hey, do you have any songs for me? Come back."
Night turns into day. I walk alone and feel you gone through streets of stone until the dawn. When day turns to night, I await the morning light and another place, another time.
The ninth track on the album is called You Want Some, and this is the only song that doesn't feature either Ringo or T-Bone Burnett as a writer. The intro sounds to me like a horse galloping, which I just found to be, you know, delightful. I also thought that this is probably the most Ringo-like of all of these songs, because the entire message of the song is based around a peace and love vibe. So, you know, this is truly deep Ringo territory here.
Well, I got love to give. Maybe that's a better than.
And that'll take us to the closing track, Thankful.
I had it all, then I started to fall. I turned away.
Ringo, along with a gentleman by the name of Bruce Sugar, wrote this song. The song does feature a really nice vocal with Alison Krauss.
And now I'm thankful for the love you show. Your love for me I've never known. Thankful for the stars above. Hoping for more peace and love.
song was written as a love letter from Ringo to his wife, and you can definitely hear that in the song. And I thought it was a really nice way to close out the album. You know, the album itself is a really nice journey. I feel pretty comfortable giving this one like 3.5 stars, maybe bordering on 4 stars in some areas.
Ringo Starr, one of the finest drummers going back to the early 1960s, certainly one of the most charming and engaging personalities in pop music going back to the early 60s. He is a drummer who played the songs. It wasn't about his ego. There is one drum solo in Ringo's recorded career, and it is the end.
I only ever wanted to be a drummer.
Let's turn you over to Chris, and it's recipe time again, folks. The Beatles were known for their sweet tooth, and like a lot of other English people, including all our friends at Doctor Who, jelly babies were the candy to crave. But then there's also good old-fashioned English comfort food, and that means fish and chips with a little malt vinegar on the side. Chris?
You nailed it with that malt vinegar stuff, because if you don't put malt vinegar on fish and chips, what are you even doing, man? You can still buy jelly babies. I've never had one. Perhaps I'll buy some.
They're good.
I bet they are. If they're good enough for the Beatles, they're good enough for me. Now, before we get into the recipe itself, let's make a couple of things easier for you. First of all, what kind of fish works best with this batter? A thick white fish, cod, haddock, or pollock are preferable. The batter will include both dark beer and sparkling water. The carbonation and the type of fish, this should ensure a light, mild, tender outcome. Perfect for crispy fish and chips. Another tip: use one pot to fry the chips, then the fish, and then the chips again for that crisp exterior and fluffy interior. Again, you want to do both of those in the same pot. You're going to fry the chips, you're going to fry the fish, then you're going to fry the chips again, and you'll keep the fish warm in the oven on a low oven while you're frying the potatoes a second time, you know, to make sure that they're both ready to eat at the same time. Lastly, before we get to the actual recipe, you're going to want to blanch the chips before you fry. Well, a lot of recipes find that they get the best results and they make really good crispy fries. Blanching and double frying are both very important in that method, which is why they're both used in this recipe. Patting the potatoes dry before you fry them will ensure less moisture and will result in crispier fried chips. Let's get to the recipe. For the fish, you're going to need 7 tablespoons of all-purpose flour divided, 7 tablespoons of cornstarch, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, fine salt to taste, freshly ground black pepper to taste, 1/3 cup of cold dark beer, and 1/3 cup of cold sparkling water, and 4 7-ounce thick white fish fillets. For the chips, you're going to need 2 pounds of potatoes peeled, and vegetable oil is needed for frying. Once you've gathered the ingredients, set aside 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour. In a large, roomy bowl, mix the remaining 5 tablespoons of all-purpose flour with the 7 tablespoons of cornstarch and 1 teaspoon of baking powder. Season lightly with a tiny pinch of fine salt and freshly ground black pepper. Next, you'll use a fork to whisk continuously and add 1/3 cup of cold dark beer and 1/3 cup of cold sparkling water. Some of you might have just caught the fact that I said 1/3 cup instead of 1/3 cup. That is my own little tribute to the pioneer woman who I absolutely love when she says 1/4 cup. Actually, my wife likes that too. You'll add those 1/3 cups to the flour mixture and continue mixing until you have a thick, smooth batter. Place the batter in the fridge to rest for 30 minutes to an hour. Meanwhile, cut 2 pounds of peeled potatoes into a little less than 1/2 inch thick slices, and then slice these into 1/2 inch wide sticks. Place the chips into a colander and rinse under cold water. Place the washed chips into a saucepan of enough cold water to cover them by about 1 inch. Bring to a gentle boil over a high heat, then simmer on a low heat for 3 to 4 minutes. After that, you'll drain. Transfer to a paper towel-lined plate, then pat dry with paper towels. Keep in the fridge covered with paper towels until needed. Meanwhile, lay your 4 7-ounce thick white fish fillets on a paper towel and pat dry. Season lightly with a little salt. Heat about 3 inches of vegetable oil to 350 degrees in a deep fryer or a large deep saucepan. Side note, Dutch ovens work perfectly for this. Par cook the chips a few handfuls at a time in the oil, about 2 minutes. Do not brown them. Remove the chips from the oil and drain on paper towels. Set them aside. Now you're going to take your 2 tablespoons of reserve flour into a shallow bowl, toss each fish fillet in the flour and shake off any excess. You're going to dip that into the batter, coating the entire fillet. You're going to position a rack in the center of the oven and heat to 200 degrees Fahrenheit. Line a rimmed baking sheet with paper towels and set aside. Bring the oil temperature back to 350 degrees. Carefully lower each fillet into the hot oil. Fry until the batter is crisp and golden, turning the fillets occasionally with a large slotted spoon, about 6 to 8 minutes. Remove the fillets from the oil to the paper towel-lined baking sheet. Sprinkle lightly with salt and transfer to the oven to keep warm. Step 13, yes, folks, we now have more steps than AA. Heat the oil to 400 degrees, then cook the chips in batches until golden and crisp, about 5 minutes. Remove from the oil and drain. Season with salt. Now for the best part. The final step, serve immediately, accompanied by your favorite condiment and a cold pint of whatever you're having.
Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. Gonna try with a little help from my friends.
It's outlaw country.
Hate is always foolish. Love is always wise. Always try to be nice, but never fail to be kind.
I can see all the people in this whole wide world. That's a union that'll tear the fascists down, down, down. That's a union that'll tear the fascists down.
And we'll never rest again until every Nazi dies.
I'd like to remind you to email us at sixstringhayride@yahoo.com. Six is spelled out. You can also search us on Facebook as Six String Hayride. Or what we'd really appreciate you doing is finding us on Patreon under Six String Hayride as well.
Well, folks, thanks again for joining your hosts, Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley, on the Six String Hayride Classic Country Podcast. We are here for all of your classic country, rockabilly, early rock and roll, little gospel, little blues, a lot of excellent country music themed recipes. And basically, we are here to keep your musical circle rockin', boppin', and very much unbroken. So thank you for sticking with us. We will see you down the road real soon. And again, whether it's in your home, in your community, wherever it is you do your thing, keep your circle unbroken. Stay well, stay safe, and we'll see you real soon.
They're not going to catch us. We're on a mission from God.
Oh, can the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a bitter home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
One of these days, and it won't be long, I'll rejoin them in a song. I'm gonna join the family circle at the throne. No, the circle won't be broken by and by, Lord, by and by.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.